Hello, coconuts. Welcome to another episode of TFC Stock Geek Out. Today, we visit a company that almost everybody knows and uses every day. Unless, of course, you live in China or North Korea. This company is, wait for it, Google or Alphabet. During this period of crazy drawdowns in the market, many investors have turned to companies that generate cash flow and profits. And Alphabet is one of those companies. Not only are they producing insane amount of free cash every quarter, they are still growing and innovating at a healthy clip. And yet, they're already the elephant of the jungle. How much more can they grow? What about their advertising business and their long-run potential of it? Or YouTube? Or their fast-growing cloud segment? We'll dig deeper into all these areas of Google and answer these questions. We'll also find out whether or not this elephant can still grow further. Joining me today is Chris Osanto, the founder of Value Investing Mentorship. He educates business owners and professionals who aspire to develop their stocks investing skills via and high-touch one-to-one coaching. His students include two Forbes 30 Under 30 and many other high-performing business owners. Let's dive in today's episode on Alphabet with Chris. For reference, this episode was recorded on 27th August 2022. Our discussion today is solely for education and entertainment purposes. It does not serve as any form of advice or recommendations. Thank you for loving what we do and empowering us financially to do more for you. Now let's geek out.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, welcome to Stock Geek Out, Coconut. So today we have a very special guest that's going to cover a very interesting company that pretty much everyone knows unless you're living under a rock, right? So my guest for today on today's Stock Geek Out on the Financial Coconut is Chris Osanto. So I'll let Chris do a little bit of the intro of himself. He's actually a very, very amazing investor. I've listened to a few of his podcasts as well. So Chris, why don't you take it away and share what exactly do you do and your own investing background?
Thanks, Max. I've been investing since I was around 20 years old, and it's been a passion of mine ever since. So I'm currently in the middle of starting a fund as well, doing some fundraising, and I have a blog, ratingwealth.com, and I also have an education business, VIM, Value Investing Mentorship, where we educate business owners and senior professionals in a high-touch nature of one-to-one or in small groups, on really the transformation on how to get the essential life skill of how to invest and grow with listed companies in the stock market through stocks and options.
Got it, yeah. So I think the cool part is, Chris, actually, you're not just an investor on your own. You actually teach investing. So you should walk the talk and kind of eat your own cooking. So yeah, I love it. Right. So I think with that said, coconuts, let's dive into today's session. So today's company is none other than, drumroll please, the one, the only legendary Alphabet, a.k.a. Google. Right. So, first of all, I think if you have no idea what Google is or what company this is, then I think this podcast will not be able to help you because you've probably been living under a rock for the last 50 years or so. Okay, but anyway, what happens is today's segment is specifically on Google. And I think Google is a very interesting company because it's extremely huge, but it's still growing at very, very jealous rates that other companies can only look at, even though other companies are much smaller. So we'll do a quick jump, 50,000 foot view from the top. So maybe Chris, you can walk us a little bit through about what exactly, stupid question, is Google and what do they do just in general from a business perspective?
Sure, Max. So Google, or Alphabet, which is essentially the holding company of Google, they penetrate almost every part of our life. You see it in your email, through Gmail, you see it in your Google Maps, you see it in YouTube. But ultimately, how they make money and their business model is still pretty much through ads, digital ads. just like Meta, right?
Yeah.
Although Alphabet or Google does not have such a high concentration of revenue in digital ads, unlike Meta. I think a Meta or Facebook makes around 90+, 95 or 98% of its revenue from online ads.
That's right.
While for Alphabet, they make around 85% of that through online ads because they also have other businesses,
yep,
like in hardware, Pixel smartphones. Mm. So that's generally the overview. So basically, Google is a wholly owned subsidiary of Alphabet.
Yep.
They own things like Google Play Store. They make money from the sales of apps in your Google Play Store, in your Android phones. They make money from the contents in their YouTube. And they also make money from cloud services, fees, and other licensing revenue. So that's generally the overview of what Alphabet does, yep, from the top.
Got it. I love it. So I think we'll just kind of tease the listeners to listen to this episode closely, because two things that Chris mentioned early on that I'll be diving a little bit more in depth with him is something that a lot of investors are also looking closely at for Google. Number one is the cloud business, right? Because that's close comparisons to whether it's AWS or whether it's Azure, right? And number two is actually YouTube, which has a lot more traction these days. So I think first and foremost, I want to talk about just from an overall revenue growth point of view first, so that the listeners can get some, I would say, financial backdrop of this. So we can start from the top line. So maybe you can just walk us through a little bit of what has been their revenue growth over the last few years, or maybe even the recent 1 or 2 years or the quarters from COVID-19 period, so that we know what we're dealing with down here. Yep.
Yeah, sure. So in terms of revenue growth, one of their fastest growing revenue performance, mm-hmm, has recently been driven by the search and the cloud.
Yep.
So they are also making a lot of investment over the years in AI and computing.
Yep.
Ultimately, their focus is to make their services valuable for their customers, because if it's valuable, then people use it. If people use it, then they can run ads on it, right? So in terms of revenue growth as a company, they have been doing very well in 2021.
Yes.
Because of COVID, right? So in 2021, the revenue grew about 62% year over year in 2021,
yep,
to about 61.8 billion-ish.
Yep.
In constant currency, revenues year on year is about 57%. That's in 2021.
Yeah.
So recently, I was looking at its latest quarterly earnings, which was ending June 30, 2022. Mm-hmm. Their revenue growth, yeah, they are still growing,
yes,
but it dropped from 62% year-on-year to 13% year-on-year.
Exactly.
So in constant currency, revenues year-on-year is about 16% because the USD appreciate in value, right? Mm. So that's the result. But if, let's say, you're looking at it in comparison with its nearest so-called digital ads competitors,
yes,
they actually fared much better, because for Meta, its revenue is actually down, right?
Negative, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
For so, the latest quarter.
Yeah,
yeah. Got it. So yeah, I think I wanted to kind of establish the context, because first and foremost, you know, in the investing circle, people like to say, yeah, you know, it's a very big company, how much more can they grow? But this is like the mammoth for the juggernaut in the S&P, and it grew a whopping 60+% just in 2021. So I think that's something to look at. But of course, the recent 30% latest quarter growth is, of course, I know it's kind of fighting a tougher comparison based off last year's quarter, so understandable. And maybe you can talk a little bit about the margin profile from a gross margin profit point of view for the listeners, and then maybe the EBIT, which is the operating margin, so that at least we know what numbers we're dealing with before we jump in further on an overall group basis.
So overall on a group basis, I think we are looking at around 56-ish% gross margins for,
yep,
Alphabet,
yep,
on an overall group basis.
Mm-hmm.
So if you compare that to its competitors, is pretty decent.
Yep.
I would say that, of course, a Meta gross margins is still higher at, yep, over 80%.
Of course, yeah.
And followed by Microsoft is also another, yep, tech company that has a, yep, very high gross margins. So Alphabet gross margins at about 56% is very strong in my view. And that actually shows competitive advantage, right? So if you look at their operating margin, which is basically taking into account the operating income, which is revenue minus operating expenses, over its revenue, so operating income over revenue, their operating margin is around 29.65%.
Yes, fantastic.
So that is a fantastic operating margin. And by the way, operating margin is one of the five things that Professor Aswath Damodaran like to look at when he analyzes companies, right? Because it's important, as all companies need a good operating margin to pay its fixed costs, such as its interest on debt. So while we are at the margin discussion, a quick look at its net profit margin for such a big company is also amazing, because we are looking at about a 25.89% net profit margin for Alphabet.
Yeah, my goodness.
For such a huge company. So like Max, just now you mentioned, for such a big company, they grew their revenue top line. It's not bottom line, a top line. A bottom line, they can grow it by maybe cutting costs and things like that. But top line revenue at 61% in 2021 is amazing. And they are still growing despite some headwinds in the digital ad space, right?
Yes.
And I think that is probably because of the fact that their total addressable market is still growing. They make it easier for people to do digital ads. Mm. They make it easy for all the small and medium businesses to do that. Mm. And while we are on this topic, I think it's also one of their competitive advantage, having a large source of customer, right? So they are not concentrated on maybe the top three customers or the top five customers.
Yep.
So I think that's very powerful, and that is a source of moat for Alphabet.
And that's because like Google advertisements, they are not just like an advertising agency where they only advertise for one or two brands, right? It's kind of even the small mom and pop retailers can also advertise through what we call Google AdWords, right?
Yep, yep.
Exactly.
In fact, I think that's their key differentiation, right?
Yep.
So they make it so easy for people to, you know, if you have a business and you have certain keywords that you want to target, you can do that.
Yeah, and then pay per click. Yeah.
Yeah, and you pay per click. And I mean, it's not cheap, but pay per click is a high intent, right? As opposed to maybe like Meta platforms, where, you know, sometimes if they click your ads, it might be just, you know, they're scrolling and things like that.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. So I think now that you mentioned it, I love it, because you kind of took me naturally to the point I wanted to dive in deeper. So just to kind of summarize, Chris, just correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just going to segment Google for simplicity of the users into a few different things we want to focus on today. Number one is just the general advertising segment. I know that part involves YouTube, because I know Google lumps this together as like Google services or advertising, but I'll just put like the AdWords, the advertising segment as one. I'll put YouTube as a segment we want to jump in separately today. And then the last one is the cloud business, because I think that's something that's very, very exciting to talk about. So let's start with the advertising business first. So let's do a quick comparison between like Google and Facebook. Now, obviously, I think due to the Apple tracking transparency, the app tracking transparency, ATT, right? We all know Facebook has taken a big hit due to headwinds in targeting down there. Google, probably not as much, but I want to hear your take. So how do you see this landscape evolving after Apple's ATT kind of hammer being hammered down? How does it affect Facebook and Google separately? And do you think Google actually has an advantage here?
Sure, Max. So I think I'm a shareholder of both Meta platforms, or Facebook and Alphabet, right? I'm not a shareholder of Apple because I didn't fully appreciate the competitive advantage that Apple actually has.
Or is it because they kind of put the ATT on your two companies, so you just refuse to own them?
It's because...
Okay, just joking.
Yeah, no, it's because I realized that Apple has a lot of power. Because I'm sure you also know that it has been made public that Google or Alphabet pays Apple billions of dollars a year to make their search the default, right?
Yes.
So that actually shows why do you need to pay a company billions of dollars a year? Because they are the gatekeeper to the users.
Correct. I think the line in the financial statement that they show is a customer acquisition cost. That's the label that they use.
Might be. Yes. So they are the gatekeeper, and the apps like Facebook or Google basically have to comply, right? Because they own the hardware.
Mm.
So, by the way, maybe that's also the reason why Meta is trying to sort of do their best to create the best hardware for the next generation platform could in be. The VR space. Because yeah. they have an aspiration to own the hardware.
Mm.
Although it's going to be hard, but yeah. but let's see what's going to happen. I do not think that Google is as affected as mm-hmm. Facebook.
Why not? Yeah.
Because Facebook rely on, from my knowledge, Facebook rely on a lot of sort of like they need to track the users' behaviors across websites.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
So based on the behaviors of these people across a website, they can use this to target back at Facebook.
Correct.
So after we look at this website, and then you go back to your Facebook and Instagram, and then you yeah. see that thing again.
So it's based on the targeting, based on the pixel, which is what we call it
yeah.
into the user.
Yeah, okay. So that's actually very powerful because that has the retargeting effect.
Yeah.
So maybe if you are not, you don't want to buy yet,
yeah.
you see that brand, then maybe days later you yeah. see that brand again, okay, now I want to buy. Well, for Google, on the other hand, is based on intent. So
nice.
If you have an intent on searching for the best coffee in Paya Lebar,
yeah.
right? And then if you have a cafe that sells coffee in Paya Lebar, you can have an ad there.
Mm.
And then you already have an intent to go for the best coffee, right? Mm. So that's actually a very high quality thing. And I think that's the key differentiation. And I mean, for YouTube, it's also very interesting. Because for YouTube, if you watch a video on something, if you watch a video on maybe how to bake a cookie,
mm.
if you think about it, the ads can be related to
yes.
cookies, right? So there's also yeah. the intent.
Correct.
Then you can sell some cookie baking,
yeah.
you know, set or whatever. So that's actually very powerful. But for Facebook, they're trying to, you know, okay, you subscribe to, you know, these groups, this interest. They're trying to do that also. But I think it wasn't, they still cannot get over the previous effectiveness of being able to, you know, track different.
Yes, and that was pretty accurate before Apple came in to
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
stir the pot. Okay, yeah. got it. So yeah, I think what we're getting here is that Facebook is more on a targeting basis, whereas Google's ad business is more of an intention basis in general. Of course, I'm
yep.
sure there's some crisscrosses here and there. Like
yep.
Google, I believe you can also do a little bit of targeting, but that's yep. the general how you segment them. So yes, now that we understand the advertising business, so I think I want to go into specifically, which is a very big thing, which is YouTube. So, you know, like YouTube is a segment where, you know, I think when they first acquired it, like nobody really thought that much of them. But in the recent earnings calls, because I do, I'm not invested in Google, but I do follow the earnings calls quite closely because I really enjoy just seeing how they kind of take the analyst questions. In the recent quarters, a lot more attention has been placed on YouTube. And I think the growth was phenomenal during the COVID-19 period. Right, but what happens, I think the growth recently for YouTube actually slowed down. Correct me if my financials are wrong. I believe YouTube's current recent growth rate in the latest quarter was like 4%. Like,
yep.
Whereas before that, in the previous year, they were like, you know, 20-30% and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a slight slowdown. You see a lot of analysts asking questions on YouTube, monetization, and even the growth. So I want to hear your thing. Let's talk about YouTube.
Mm.
Do you think YouTube still has potential to grow, and why or why not? And what is the value that it can bring over to Google?
Yeah. So YouTube is a very important asset for Alphabet right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think previously when they wanted to acquire YouTube, of course, you know, there need to be some convincing as well. So if I'm not wrong, that person who sort of convinced Alphabet to acquire YouTube is now heading the YouTube.
Nice.
You are right that the YouTube ads revenue has slowed. So it was about $7 billion in 2021. In 2022, quarter ended June 30, it only increased by about $340 million-ish to about $7.34 billion.
Yes.
So that's pretty decent because that is like, sort of, if you think about it, that is the third highest source of revenue for Alphabet company in total. The first being the Google search,
yes.
of course, followed by the Google network, and then the YouTube ads, right?
Mm.
So moving forward, YouTube, in my view, personally, I don't use much YouTube, but a lot of my friends uses YouTube a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think YouTube has a lot of optionality built into it because you notice that, you know, traditionally they have always been about videos and things like that. But if I'm not wrong, they are also moving into podcasts.
Yes, that's
and
right.
They are moving into music, right? So they are trying to, you know, take the share of proven business model of Spotify.
Yeah. And so also that's YouTube quite Shorts, right? Which is the TikTok kind of clone as well.
Yeah. So there's that optionality built into it, right? Okay. Because you already have a YouTube channel, you have your subscribers, and then how you can like leverage on your users. Plus, the nice thing about YouTube, right, is that it's also user-generated content.
Mm.
Yeah, so like Facebook, like TikTok. So that's actually quite powerful as opposed to, you know, where you have to spend billions and billions every year like Netflix, you know, to to invest.
Correct.
To simply keep the people not leaving, you know.
Yeah.
But YouTube is user-generated and it's free, right? So I think that's a very strong business model.
Got it. So I think, speaking of YouTube, so you're right in the sense where YouTube kind of increases the modalities for the different users of Google's services, whether the advertising can be targeted by intent or it can be targeted by you watching your video and then the algo knows what you like. So will you say there's a little bit of clone towards what Facebook was also doing? So the Google search works based on intent, right? They want we all get like search like, where's the nearest vet for my dog and I can find it. But for YouTube, it's also based on a little bit on intent by search for the videos, but a lot of it is also based on the algo that pops up. And then the ads that's shown is also a little bit based on the channels that I watch. So what do you think? Would you say actually there's a little bit of trying to clone Facebook's algo model as well?
Yeah, I do think there's some similarities. And of course, these companies, companies like Alphabet, they are spending billions of dollars in R&D and they are always using AI to just to see what makes sense for the users. Maybe there are some aspects with regards to that. But ultimately, I would say Meta's business is still pretty much social. Mm. It's about family and friends update, groups updates.
Okay.
While YouTube business would probably revolve more around interest and probably there are some social aspect where, you know, some live videos that you can have chat, but it's not as like social.
So the social graph isn't the main part. Okay, fantastic. Okay, got it. So from what I'm hearing from Chris, the advertising business is a juggernaut in the first place. And the advertising business, to kind of break it down, consists of the search, consists of Google Network, which is also part of the ad segment, and YouTube, which is also part of the advertisement segment. So I believe this makes up the bulk of their revenue right now, and it's also the highest margin profile business. Right, so the reason their margin is slightly lower than Facebook is likely because they have the other bets or the cloud that kind of neutralizes the higher margin profile, right? Like you mentioned, Facebook was at 80%+ gross margins, whereas Google is a bit less at like 50-ish. It's because it gets diluted.
Yep, and also because Alphabet has moonshot investments in place for bets like, you know, I think last time they are trying to do this Google Fiber, which is faster internet access to homes, right, in this Google Fiber. But from what I understand, it's not working that well. Yeah. And I invested in another company called Comcast.
Yeah.
So so their cable business is still pretty solid and pretty powerful, free cash flow generative. And it's hard to take the market share away from them.
Yeah.
The one that has seems to be more... seems to progress better for Alphabet is Waymo, the self-driving cars. So that's under their moonshot investments.
Yeah. Do they lump all this under other bets? I presume so, right? It's under the other bets segment, right? In the like financials?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So it's under the other bets segments.
Yeah.
They are actually making revenue already, you know, Max, these other bets.
Okay.
In 2021, a quarter ended June 30, is about $192 million for the other bet segment.
Nice. Okay.
In the 2022, a quarter ended June 30, is about $193 million. Mm. But their loss is $1.398 billion and $1.686 billion respectively. So, but I think it's good that they are doing this because it's only the innovators can last, right? Who can compound over time. So their R&D has been growing at about 14% a year in the last 3 years, and it remains at only about 11 to 12% of their revenue, which I think, so that means that while they are investing in the future, it's sort of, they maintain it at about 11 to 12% of their revenue. But because of their revenue increasing, their R&D has also been growing in the past few years.
Yeah, so I think to give the listener some context, right? So Chris is fantastic at breaking out Alphabet right now. So just to give a bit of context, the Google advertising segment takes up about 80% of the entire group's revenue based on what you shared just now. So, and then these other bets and the cloud and a few other stuff takes up the balance remaining, which is in this case 20%. So I want to focus now on, let's put the other bets on hold for a while first. We'll come back slightly later. This thing called Google Cloud. Okay.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, so why I want to talk about Google Cloud is because I think for the cloud business, it's been made very popular and mainstream among investors is because of the none other than one and only AWS. So we all know that the addressable market for the cloud business is pretty much we're still in early days. And even though you look at like the cloud business, just to give some context for listeners, the cloud business did 6.3 billion in revenue just this recent quarter. That's only a very small percent. Just to give the context to the listeners, Google's revenue this quarter is 70 billion and the cloud business is only 6.3 billion. So it's slightly less than 10%. But if you look at it just from an absolute number, it's 6.3 billion in a quarter. So that in itself is a juggernaut of a business. In if I kind of times four over like a year, that's close to like a 25 billion a year run rate business. So, but yet they're also burning a lot of cash for the cloud business. So I want to talk about, the question for you is this, right, Chris? So Google Cloud versus AWS versus like Azure. So I'm not sure, maybe have you like deep dive into the cloud business yet, but is it possible for Google Cloud to continue taking share despite AWS being like the big player in the jungle?
So I think the cloud, as you mentioned, Max, is a very popular areas of growth for many businesses like the AWS. I'm not entirely sure of the market share of AWS, but I do know it's a huge market share and they're leading the market by leaps and bounds, right? And in fact that's the cash flow generator for Amazon. The cloud business is growing for the whole industry in general. I'm also vested in another company called Micron, which is like Monish Barbara has it also, and Lilu. So if I'm not wrong, a Micron growth is also through supplying memories for the cloud segments and the cloud companies, right? So for Google, I'm not surprised that it's an area of growth for them. So Google Cloud is an area where Google actually leverages on its technological expertise to create and maintain their focus in the private cloud platform, right? And their goal right now is to drive more revenue for the company. So in terms of growth, you rightly pointed out that it's growing fast. It's actually at about 4.6 billion-ish in the quarter ended June 30 in 2021. It went up to about 6.276 billion-ish in the quarter ended June 30, 2022, right?
And just to give some context, guys, that is a 37% growth rate year-on-year.
Yeah, so that's a 37% growth rate year-on-year. And that's amazing because you see all the other segments did not grow as fast anymore, right? So, but it's still money-losing. It's about... I think their operating loss for the latest quarter was about 858 million correct, for the Google Cloud, right? But you will notice that Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Alphabet and Google, he seems to be quite proud of the performance of the cloud because he said that these are really the area where he's particularly like making more investment in. And I think we should be able to expect that in the future, Google Cloud will actually still have some growth runway ahead of them. Segment. Although now it's still at a loss, and that's why, like you see, overall, or maybe that's why the margins for Alphabet, the gross margins is not as high as Meta.
Yes, because Meta's fully concentrated, like 98%, I believe like 98.5% on ads, whereas Google has these other bets in the cloud business, right? Fantastic. Yep. So I think now that you kind of mentioned it, since you also brought up, like, you know, we were talking about like AWS and stuff, I want to talk about, so let's talk about moats right now, right? Which as a really proper investors, we always look at moats, like Buffett says. So let's talk about the moat for Google. What moats does Alphabet or does Google have, in your opinion?
Google has some of the competitive advantage and the moat that I think is quite durable. One of it is high switching costs, especially for maybe for its products like Gmail.
Okay.
You know, where you have all your, you know,
so all the data is inside.
Yeah, all your data. Okay. And if you have an email, then if you want to change email, maybe you are lazy to do that. Mm. Plus, it maybe like cost you free or maybe just about $10 or what per month, right?
Yeah.
And of course, there's also the economies of scale and the network effect, right? Because if you look at YouTube and if you look at the Google networks, like what goes behind the search and all their algorithms, how they crawl through all the websites. So there's actually a lot of technological expertise and innovation behind it, and they're spending a lot of R&D on it, more than any other company that's trying to take the market share.
Understand. And also, you know, the part where you mentioned like switching costs. So here's the part where I kind of agree. I think it's very interesting. But in a sense, you see, like, is it easy to switch to another search provider? Actually, yes, you can. You can do that in seconds. But the question then is, who is the other search provider you're going to switch
Bing.
To? Like, yeah, Bing. Or is it like Yahoo? Right? So you're not going to do that. So in a way, can you switch? Yes. It's not like you're locked. This is not like a SaaS software, right?
Yeah,
but then, okay, you can switch. But you switch to who?
Like, yeah,
I mean, unless you're in China, then that's a different story, right? You know, then you got to use like a different engine. So yeah, you nailed it very, very well. But I want to talk a bit about like the network effects. Can you elaborate a bit about the network effects for Google? So when you mentioned like on YouTube or not, do you mean like because there's more advertisers and because of that, like there's going to be more users because they make more money and they can kind of like, how does network effect for Google play out?
Because in my view, because YouTube is a user-generated content business, so people post videos there, not only because YouTube can host it, but also because you host and then you share with friends, right? Yeah. So when you do that, actually what happens is that when you share the videos with friends, you are sharing from a YouTube website, right?
Yeah.
So ultimately, when more people, because YouTube is the dominant player now in video.
Yeah.
If I'm not wrong, they are up there in terms of streaming hours, right? With like companies like Netflix, Hulu, etc. In terms of streaming hours, you know? If I'm not wrong, they are the top three or something, right? So when so many people are already viewing YouTube, some of them on a daily basis, then when they actually want to, you know, if they do want to create their own channel and, you know, upload their own videos, they will definitely go to YouTube.
Got it.
Plus, they already have the skill. So they know that there are some organic people who are already searching on YouTube. So it's the first provider of choice already.
So more content brings in more eyeballs. More eyeballs
brings in more content.
More people want to make content there. And then the flywheel just spinning and spinning and spinning. So just to share with you something on YouTube, because I think earlier you mentioned you probably don't use it as much, but you know, like YouTube is insane. Like I personally, I this sounds so embarrassing. In my free time when I'm a little bored, I just go over to YouTube because I have premium.
Yep.
And then I just watch random 3-minute snippet videos. And because they've already known what my interests are, example, like I watched like maybe mini snippets of Friends or mini snippets from movies or like the Avengers that I just want to rewatch. And then once I click on those things, they just show other mini snippets from similar movies and similar genres of dramas that I love. And then they just show like mini snippets of The Office, of Friends. And then it's all just 3 minutes long, but you can just spend half an hour just watching. And so it's better than Netflix, because Netflix, each show is at least like, you know, half an hour. Right? Yeah, like, this is just 3 minutes, but the 3 minutes becomes like 1 hour, and I don't even know that time flies by. And that's you're totally right. And I do it just out of boredom.
And that's the power of the AI and the algorithm.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the playbook that companies like TikTok is using also.
Yeah, so AI is really, so it's no longer the social graph, which is where Facebook started because of like social networks. It's now based off like algorithms, AIs, artificial intelligence and stuff. Okay, fantastic. So yes, I think we've covered kind of YouTube. We've covered the Google advertising segment and also Google Cloud. So let's, and also the moats, right? So the moats you've mentioned, there's the network effects there, more users, more viewers, and then vice versa, the whole thing happens. So let's focus on the very interesting question right now. Valuation. this is every investor. Probably they're just all waiting for this part. Like, okay, yeah, I know I want to buy Google. Don't have to tell me, Chris. But you know, like this price, I know they also did a stock split, so the stock looks cheap right now. But you know, we all know that's not how you should gauge cheap, because it's always about the valuation. So yes, I'm not sure what price they're at now, what market cap. But so is this a good price to invest into Google? What do you think, Chris?
So valuation is always a factor, right? Yeah. When we think about companies, and it's a very important factor as well. Maybe we can start by thinking about it in a general view of relative valuation. Mm. We can look a little bit into maybe their price to earnings or price to cash flow.
Okay.
So if you look at Google's current price to earnings, is actually around 20-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 20 plus, if I'm not wrong. Yeah. Okay. And price to cash flow is around, from the last time I saw, it's around 16-ish. And the interesting thing is, if you look at its 5-year average, its price to earnings on average is around 33-ish. And price to cash flow is around 19-ish.
Yeah.
So we are seeing that the current price to earnings and price to cash flow is below its
historical
5-year so-called average. But for companies like Alphabet, I like to look at it from a point of view of free cash flow, because they are free cash flow positive, and they have predictable and sort of growing free cash flow in the last 3 to 5 years.
Yes.
So I usually look at it, I make some, which is in my view, some reasonable assumptions on its free cash flow based on the past, based on my understanding of the company and moving forward, right? So how I look at it is that I looked at the past 5 years rough free cash flow compounded annual growth rate, which is about 20.7%-ish, right? And then I think that moving forward, maybe in the next 10 years, I don't think it's going to grow as much, but I do think it'll still grow.
Okay.
So I make about, maybe I think it will grow at roughly 2/3.
Okay.
The past 5 years average, right? And then, so we are looking at maybe, I'm assuming, so my assumption is about 13.3% a year for the next 10 years.
Okay.
And then after that, a perpetual growth rate of maybe around 5%-ish.
Okay, so this is the terminal growth rate you're using. So,
yep.
So sorry to cut you off a little bit. So for the listeners listening in right now, so Chris is using a discounted cash flow model in this case, because you kind of covered the relative valuation just now for the PE multiple. So now he's going deeper into the DCF. So you're assuming, do you say 13%?
I think about 13.3%. Okay. So my assumption is around there for the next 10 years.
Got it, from year 1 to year 10. Okay.
So this is like so-called my base case assumptions.
Understand.
Then I look at what's the value, right, today. Yeah. So I'm using a cost of equity or a discount rate of about 10%.
Okay. Yeah. So discount rate of 10%, then your terminal value is 5%.
Yeah,
okay,
about 5%. Yeah. So to some people might be on the high side. Yeah. So I mean, you can.
I mean, yeah, you can like adjust it. Yeah. Got it. So yes, what's the magic number that has brought us to? What's the intrinsic value?
So I think before margin of safety is about 189.
Okay.
So after margin of safety, so I thought of what's a good margin of safety for Alphabet, right?
Yeah.
So my personal opinion is that is a pretty great company,
yeah.
And they are run by pretty great people,
yeah.
Right? So the margin of safety, I put it at quite a low rate of 5%.
Okay.
So I get about, based on my assumptions, a value of about $179.8.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're really willing to go for it at fair value, right? Not much.
Yeah, because it's of the quality a pretty great company.
Okay, and what's the price at right now?
Right now, yesterday, the market like sort of like crashed, yeah, you know. Yeah.
Just to give some context, guys, this is being recorded on 27th August. So yesterday was Friday, 26th August. So yeah, the market went through a deep correction.
Yes, after Fed Powell statement,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think the current price is about, if I'm not wrong, it's about 110.
Oh. Yeah,
110.
Okay.
Yeah, so... Yeah, so...
So it's actually at very... So it's in from this perspective of DCF, of course, you have to make your own assumptions if you're listening in. This is considered undervalued, quote-unquote, or deeply discounted. Or maybe not deeply, but just quite discounted, right? Of course, please take note, this is not a stock recommendation.
Yes, right? Yes.
Yeah, but based on this DCF model that you did, it's actually okay to actually enter at this price. Am I right to say so? Based on your own valuation.
Yeah, metrics. So based on my assumptions, it seems cheap. It seems undervalued, and it's a pretty great company with a durable, in my view, a durable competitive advantage.
Got it.
It's something that you can see it still there, you know, in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And I think they'll still be strong. Yeah.
Fantastic. So I'll do a sum up of how Chris did the valuation. So he uses, the thing I love is that, so you know, a lot of us when valuation, we always just use one method, but Chris is very, very open-minded to realize, he's using two different valuation metrics or styles. So the first one was a relative valuation. So the PE that he actually derived for the price to free cash flow, whichever you use, is actually below the historical. So it's considered slightly below or cheap in that sense. And then from a DCF point of view, you use like the current growth rate is about 20%+. So you use like maybe 2/3 of that, which is 13%, all the way for the next 10 years, and then it continues growing to perpetuity all the way for 5%. Then you discount at 10%, that gets you to about 180-ish, which is still higher of an intrinsic value than the current market price. So of course, you've got to make your own decisions down there. Right?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. So yeah, Chris is laughing because it's like, he just bought some Google last night, did you?
Yeah, so my average cost is around 114-ish.
Okay, yes. Nice. Okay. Right, so yeah, he has skin in the game. Okay, but anyway, I don't want to get too much into stock tips. But okay, so last thing which I want to focus on before we kind of end off. So Google is so big, Chris. You know, this is the like standard pushback. Yeah, so I know the valuations is good, everything, but it's so big. It's like the elephant in the jungle. Can it really grow some more from here? What do you think?
Well, I think in investing, of course, we must always try our best to not only ask, can it grow, but what's the consequence if we are wrong, right?
Mm.
And I think there are some risks in Alphabet still in terms of, you know, regulation risks because they are so strong.
Antitrust,
And maybe if the companies a breakup, so there's also like, I'm not sure if that's gonna be an upside or downside risk, or maybe if in the future, you know, the management may change style and some mismanagement and the growth slows down, right? But so far, they have been proven to be able to grow, and I think as long as they continue to innovate and continue to focus on the users, I think they will be able to continuously add value. And if people can't live without its products, they can have a good sustainable growth over the long run.
Got it. So what you're saying is that even if, like, you know, Manish Prabhu hits, I win, tails, I don't lose that much. So if they continue growing, they are actually at a deep discount right now. If they don't, they still have solid products, solid user base and everything. So this is not a company that's going to kind of go to zero in that sense because of how entrenched they are in people's lives, right?
Yep.
To impossible.
So likely not, because I think they did a survey some time back. If I'm not wrong, they were saying that they did a survey to say that if these services are not free, how much will you pay for it?
Mm.
So they compared it with Facebook, and then they compared with Gmail, like Google Maps, like etc. Mm. So if I'm not wrong, Facebook is maybe like a few $100s.
Mm-hmm.
Then, if I'm not wrong, they were saying that for Google, for all this Gmail stuff, they are paying to pay $1,000 and above.
That makes sense, man. I mean, I can live without Facebook, but I can't live without Google. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories. I haven't been to China in a while, but people that go to China because we're so used to using Google, and you go there and you suddenly realize, oh, how valuable Google is to you because you can't use Google there. Awesome. Yeah. Yep. So yes, I think last but not least, thank you so much for sharing, Chris. Fantastic deep dive. Where can the listeners find you, or is there anything about your investing strategies or tips that you want to share?
Thanks, Max. It's my pleasure. If you like to read some of my writings, you can go to my blog, readingwealth.com. Mm-hmm. And if you like to learn more about my education service, VIM, Value Investing Mentorship, you can go to vim.sg to find out more and grab a free call with me.
Thank you very much, Chris. All right, so that wraps up this episode on Google/Alphabet. Thank you for listening, Coconuts. We'll see you guys in the next Stock Geek Out. Thank you.
Hey, Coconuts. So I hoped you learned something useful today. Definitely recognize that investing is a personal decision. We are not giving you recommendations here, but are always happy to geek out with you about different interesting companies and trends for the future. This series definitely has a lot more depth and terms, and we want you to tell us what stock to analyze. So if you have any feedback or ideas, do drop us a line through our socials or email us at hello@thefinancialcoconut.com. See you in our next episode.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.